You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
War, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Transfiguration. I'm Name from Location. Sorry, Luke. I had to do it. There's a blooper. I can see your face. I'll do it again.
All right, yeah.
I had to do it, sorry. I'm Mark from Hampshire.
I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Location. Yes, yeah, I'll just do, might as well do it too. And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Mark Stumper. How have you been, Mark?
I've been very, very well, thank you. How about you guys?
I have been terrific. And James is always terrific, so.
Always good. Always good.
He's always good.
Always good. Always good. Good.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, where are you from in England again?
I'm from Hampshire. Well, I'm not from Hampshire. I live in Hampshire. I'm originally from Northumberland, which is in the far north of England on the border with Scotland, but I live in Hampshire now, so I live around about 60 miles southwest of London.
Okay. And, boy, how do I ask the question of what do you do in podcasting? Because it seems currently you're not doing anything in podcasting.
I'm not doing anything in podcasting other than being an occasional guest on this show, but I'm the de facto head of the Trekmate Network, which doesn't really involve too much other than being the tech guy and paying the bills. So,
oh God, maybe you need to start a GoFundMe account.
It's not too bad. I can cover the cost. It's fine. It's fine.
Oh, well,
it's not an issue.
We should still do that anyway. Awesome. Maybe run a GoFundMe Trekmate. I mean, did you hear the story, speaking of GoFundMe? Okay, when you're hearing this, last time we spoke, guys, I had said that I was going to be the winner of the $700 million Powerball jackpot.
How did you get on with that, Lou? You're here, so I'm assuming not too well.
I would have done it anyway, but actually, nobody won that Powerball jackpot, so it went up to $1.5 billion.
That is a ridiculous amount of money.
Yes, and it got split four ways, which is still a ridiculous amount of money. But no, I did not win it, unfortunately. But someone came up with the idea of a GoFundMe account, claiming that she used her entire life savings to buy lottery tickets, assuming that she would win with so many tickets. And that's completely insane. So she did a GoFundMe account to help recoup some of her losses, and they shut it down. But before they did, it was at $1,000. So if that lady is crazy enough to try this, why can't we do a little GoFundMe account for Trekmate?
We do okay. I don't like to beg the listeners for money. It's
right.
Fine. I can cover it.
Yeah, I've never done that because I'm not anywhere good enough to deserve to be paid for what I do.
No. We do this for the love of it.
Yes.
If it costs me money, I have no objection to paying the bills every month. That's fine.
Yeah, good Lord, you've seen what we've paid for Lou Trek Show. I mean, just doing things like getting to go into Atlanta for Dragon Con, driving to Indianapolis for Starbase Indy, even Trek Fest in Riverside, Iowa. I mean, buying cards, business cards, website, the hosting year after year after year. Yeah. I think in total I've made $13 in advertising from Tech Podcast. And so I absolutely quit even participating in advertising. It was the goodness. What's that backup stuff? You know, the big name backup program.
Oh, Carbonite.
Carbonite. Yes, we did a Carbonite thing, and we walked out with $13 after a few months, and that just...
No, I pay for it for the love of it.
Yep, that's nice. Thank you very much, then. Okay, so we are here to discuss tonight's episode, Transfigurations, and I will put into the chat there the script for the rest of it. So carry on when you're ready, and hopefully I did it right.
The synopsis for tonight's show is the Enterprise rescues a critically injured amnesiac who is undergoing a mysterious transformation. This is the 25th episode of Season 3 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is June the 4th, 1990, written by René Echevarria and directed by Tom Benko. Guest stars include Mark Lemure as John Doe, Charles Dennis as Sunad, Julie Warner as Christy Henschel, Col Meany as Miles O'Brien. Really? Is Col Meany really a guest star these days? He certainly shouldn't be. And we also have Patty Tipo as Nurse Temple. So, what do we think about this episode? Well, for me, I really, really enjoy this episode, which is the reason I'm here this evening. This is an episode which... I've listened to a lot of Star Trek podcasts over the years, and I don't ever think I've heard anyone talk about this particular episode. It is part of Season 3, which is obviously awesome, and I think it might get overshadowed by a lot of the awesomeness that is in this season. But no one ever talks about it, and it is right before The Best of Both Worlds, so I can easily see why it gets overshadowed, particularly since I guess it was on the... If you were buying VHS tapes at the time, it would have been right before The Best of Both Worlds Part 1. But no one talks about it. And I really, really like this episode. What about you guys?
Now, let me just jump in on that, because I don't know whether it was last week or the week before where I mentioned that Transfigurations in my world, I used to own all of the VHS tapes. I had the VHS tape for Best of Both Worlds. I describe this as the most fast-forwarded through Star Trek episode that I owned. And I think it's... I've never had a very good relationship with this episode, to be honest with you. I've always felt that it wasn't that great, and I would consider it, or I used to consider it, certainly, as filler. And you know, when you have the VHS, and when you have 90 minutes on it, 45 words, it's very hard not to be seen as filler. But I watched it. I tried to watch it as open-minded as I can, and I think there's a lot of good stuff here. I don't think it's the greatest episode in the world. I don't think it's the greatest episode in the season, or even on this VHS tape that I used to own. But it's, you know, it's good, and I think there's some good stuff there. I don't quite know why, but I seem to have had this episode and The Host merged into a single episode somehow. I don't know if it's the Beverly Crusher romantic affiliation, but I thought there was more of a relationship between Beverly and John Doe. But that clearly is The Host, so my mind's playing tricks with me on this.
There's definitely a connection between the two, isn't there? But it's a very Star Trek-y episode, isn't it? If you think about the actual story, it's incredibly Star Trek-y.
No, it is. It is. It's also, I mean, you mentioned there was René Echevarria's, I think it's his second script after having come on this season. And he kind of hangs around and does a lot of good stuff in the years ahead. I think that there's good stuff there. I think I have some problems with how they kind of resolve the situation at the end. But I think it's good. I'll leave it at that. I'll hand over to Lou. At this stage,
I'll be interested to see what people make of this episode, because no one talks about it. I've never heard anyone talk about this episode on the podcast, so this is going to be interesting.
Okay, well, obviously, you know, Dr. Crusher is walking a dangerous line that Dr. Bashir walks all the time, and that's falling for their patients. This isn't the only time she's going to do that. She will do it again. And I can't wait to get to that one, because that's when I really, I think that Star Trek really lost its guts. No guts, no glory. And I think they should have just went all out. But they make up for it in DS9. And I'm sure, Doc, you already know which two episodes I'm talking about. But
what episode are we? We're referring to The Host, and you're complaining that there's like not enough lesbianism in it. Is that where we're at?
That could be. That very well could be, is what I'm saying. It just, I think if they lost their nerve, and it was a cheap shot to say, you know, we're just not used to these kind of changes. Basically, I do like this episode. You know, they helped this guy. I thought for a lot of it, first time around, that he was lying his way, bluffing his way through the whole thing of not knowing who he is or what happened to him. But as we find out, you know, he is a disruptive influence. He spreads lies and he encourages dissent. And it disturbs the natural order. Whew. But as far as the episode, yeah, no, I do kind of like it. It is kind of nice. It's not the best and it's not the worst, so you can kind of see where I'll be heading. But the ship's log for tonight will be this. After the hell that we've been through this entire season, excuse me, I mean year, the Enterprise is enjoying some much-deserved downtime. Now, you don't have to be a holographic recreation of Einstein to know that this isn't going to last very much longer. And it doesn't. But first, before we get to any action, we've got to get to the funny part, the Laurel and Hardy part. And we're going to open up with Geordi and Worf at the bar. And I know
I really enjoy this scene. I think this is great. Yes. And this lady, this Christy Henshaw, this was the girl who Geordi was desperately trying to get off with in Booby Trap. Am
yes,
I right?
She was. She's just not into it that way.
And she wasn't interested, and all of a sudden, she's interested in him, and Geordi is being all awkward, and it's really quite a funny scene. I really do enjoy this one. He's like, don't look at her! Don't look at her! Why not? Well, she might see. I think it's great, and then the way that Worf is rolling his eyes as Geordi's being so lame is fantastic. I really enjoy this. It's great.
Right. Yeah,
she must see the fire in your eyes.
Oh, yeah, right. Thanks, Worf.
That really helps.
Yeah. And like you said, you know, if the name sounded familiar, he already crashed and burned that shuttle previously in the holodeck, you know, on the beach. And usually Geordi's model is if you don't succeed, don't bother trying again. It just doesn't work. But this time, who knows? We have to have somebody who can help him become the man he wants to be. I mean, that was funny. He doesn't even get up the nerve to say anything beyond hi. Well, how's engineering?
And he's just, how's engineering? Oh, it's fine. Thank
it's
you.
Been fine. And your sex life? Oh, it's what? No.
Non-existent.
No. No. So, Doc, how would you have handled the situation for Geordi?
You mean in terms of helping Geordi? Or
no. Oh, wow, you're cutting out, Doc. No, I mean, how would you handle it if you were Geordi in that situation? Not Geordi, but it was Dr. Roberts and Worf sitting there as he's batting his eyes at Christy. What would you have done from there?
I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't think I would have been that much better than Geordi. I'm not particularly a smooth operator in this particular field.
Wow, I find that hard to believe.
You guys aren't hearing me? Or
we are now.
Is it just
it was
a sense of shock?
I'd have gone over there and given her a big slap on her bottom.
Yes.
And said, come with me to the Arboretum.
Yes.
because you're about to have a good time.
And then he would have ended up in the brig.
I liked her. I liked her. She was pretty.
Yes, she is. She's very pretty.
She's very pretty. I'm a Christy Henshaw fan, I have to say.
Do people wander around?
I'd have considered myself lucky to have been able to pull her.
Do people wander around the Arboretum?
Sure, that's what it's there for.
That's what it's there for, yeah. Everyone seems to go to the Arboretum to get off with each other.
No. I don't think that's what it's there for.
Right? We never see it throughout Trek.
No, you never see it. It's this mythical thing.
Are you
thing.
Sure?
I'm pretty sure we never see the Arboretum.
No, isn't that where Imaginary Friend Parts was filmed?
Ooh. Ooh, yes.
Ooh.
I think that's the Arboretum. Yes, I think we see it again when Deanna discovers that she had a half-sister, too, or had a sister that she never knew about.
No, you could be right, but they're both pretty terrible episodes. So.
Yeah, well...
You could be right, though. Especially Imaginary Friend, that's an awful episode.
Yeah, but if my memory serves, though, it seems like, you know, with the Arboretum, it makes it sound like a nice, like a park or something where there's like properly sculpted trees and flowers and stuff. But my memory of those two episodes is it's more like walking around the garden center with just potted plants, and that's about it.
With a little lake.
I think it's probably... it's probably a really nice place, but effects meant that it looked like a garden center. Yeah.
Yes. It's one of those better to talk about. Of course, now I'm still thinking about Mark slapping her on the bum, but that's a different story.
So am I, actually.
Yes. Then Worf had to take you to the brig. So Worf has much to teach Geordi about women, but first we need to beam down and rescue one life form from a planet... And he seems to have crashed down. Dr. Crusher can't beam him up until she hooks his brain up to someone else's. And Geordi volunteers like crazy. Now, this is the first time, and this is the only time, we've ever seen this kind of technology.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when I watched this episode earlier today. It was like, oh, all of a sudden, this is a thing. We can just... plug this thing into your head and you can control this other person's brain functions. If this is a thing, why haven't we seen this before? Why don't they use it before? I think that's probably unique to this episode. One of the little nitpicks of this episode. I do really like this episode, but that's a definite nitpick for me.
I mean, that's an awesome one. Just hook up. I mean, that's a holographic doctor thinking there.
Yeah, just put this thing on your brain and then just breathe deeply and you'll control his brain functions or just help regulate them or whatever it is that Dr. Crusher says. Yeah. It's like, why haven't we seen this thing before? Right.
I mean, even connecting when you see the shot of light. No, I'm fine. Okay, I'm okay. I'm okay. Huh. So it's meant to keep his brain going and his body flowing just normal. So, Doc, I know that you're probably not going to be able to school us on this, but any thoughts on how this would work?
Well, actually, I thought that this was basically about regulating the central nervous system, right? Mm. I thought that's what it was. It's not like you're taking control of the individual or you're even peeking into his, into his brain or anything, but it's more of the auxiliary functions that the nervous system is doing in terms of just keeping things there and keeping things,
The autonomic functions.
Indeed.
Now,
to what extent Geordi's system and the dude they find system would be compatible in any way? Mm. I mean, that might not be the case. But if he did have two compatible people, I actually think it probably makes sense, though, right? All you're really doing is that you're picking up certain electrical signals, electrical impulses from one person and effectively just, amplifying them over to someone else. And I can see that kind of working.
Mm. It's even a shame. Like over Wi-Fi. It's a shame we hadn't seen this sort of thing before. Because I think it's quite an interesting idea.
It's a bit like a pacemaker, right? In a sense that you have this thing kind of pumping through and making sure that your heart kind of keeps... a steady rhythm. All you're really talking about is going up to a higher level for the for the nervous system. It's not about control, it's about given support. And yeah. I thought it seemed quite reasonable.
Yeah.
So he's not doing any repair.
No.
No, he's just supporting it and just making sure that things are keeping on an even keel, I guess.
Okay, so when the heart gets information from the brainstem to continue pumping, is it possible, I mean, is Geordi's brainstem bypassing John's and actually doing the work for him, or is the heart getting two different signals, one saying, oh, we're about to quit, and the other saying, no, let's keep going?
I think the heart's controlled separately from the brain.
Well,
I could be wrong there. I could be wrong there. I think the heart is completely isolated and autonomic on its own.
I think you're right there. But I guess what I'm really talking about is brainstem activity.
I guess he's just there to perform sort of some sort of stabilization function. It's not particularly important for the episode. Yeah. It's there for the effect, which we'll get coming up quite shortly.
Okay.
So I have to say, I think I've become famous for making the statement, this isn't important for the episode, and trying to move on, especially when Lou kind of says, well, why doesn't this work? And I always have to just, after a certain point of apologizing for why it might work, I have to say, well, it's not really important for the
episode. It's not really important. It just works.
It just works.
Just go with it. It's Star Trek. It's magic stuff.
Well, maybe there was some side effect or reason why they don't use it anymore. Maybe there was a recall on something. Who knows?
Well, maybe after this episode, they realized that it boosted Geordi's sex drive, and as a result, it was banned in all but
Geordi. Geordi does pretty Romulus. Well in this episode. Sorry to spoil it, as I'm sure we'll talk about it, but Geordi turns out all right in this episode, for once.
Yeah, for once. And only once. Okay, so there's a component from the escape pod that looks like some kind of storage device, but they need to figure out a way to access it. And I would just be willing to bet that Barclay could do it. But unfortunately, I think he's on Risa this week. No, maybe.
I think Barclay would work this out quite quickly, actually. It's a good point. Never thought of that.
All right. So Geordi is feeling wonderful. I don't know. Maybe, he was feeling too good. Maybe Doctor needs to run another scan. Just one more scan. But we get a glimpse that the patient's body is changing for some reason.
Now, actually, I think we're moving far too fast here, because I've got a couple of things to point out about the Sigby scenes. The first one, I think that this is a mirror. The Sigby looked different this week. It's either different or it's at least shot from a different part of Sigby. It just seems a little bit weird in my mind.
I think it's shot from a different angle, because obviously quite a lot of this episode does focus on Sigby. So I think they've shot it from a slightly different angle.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. Good things. Crusher has staff this episode.
Yes, there were doctors and nurses and people around her everywhere, which is cool.
Yep. The dude lost an arm. He actually is missing an arm when he gets
there. That's right.
And there's a mention of him having the arm in stasis and then they're going to sew it back on when he's stronger, which I think is pretty cool. And then the other thing that, of course, I couldn't let go was that, Crusher says, I think under her breath, she says, oh, this guy has amazing recuperative powers. And I should know, because I've mistakenly, cut his arm off here. And he seems to still be doing okay. So
mistakenly cut it off?
Like this, these scenes at Sigby. Yeah.
I didn't get the impression. I thought it was you had it cut off.
No, indeed. I'm just poking fun at the fact that Crusher is trying to kill her patient.
She's a terrible doctor.
Oh, that is true. I guess, after so many patients she's killed, the thought of saving one just must get her all giddy.
Absolutely.
So, okay. But, yeah, I guess we did miss over a couple things. I'm sorry. Okay, are we ready to go back to 10 forward for another visit, or should we bring up a couple of things?
Oh, yes, please.
Let me see. Actually, I was trying to... I don't know what I was... You guys were talking, and I pulled up the video because there was some... Oh, yeah, I think it was the sick bay thing. It does seem like it was just shot from a different angle. Or maybe they're still cleaning up the contaminated area from a previous episode.
I just think there's a lot of sick bay going on in this episode, so I just think we've seen things from slightly different angles. You don't normally see a lot of action in sick bay, do you? So I just think it was shot a little bit different.
I don't know. This to me seems totally different, like maybe a lab or something that we're not used to seeing. But, okay. So we're back at 10 forward, and Geordi and Data are talking about the storage unit while Mr. Worf is getting pissed off more by the second. Let's talk. More Synthahol.
More Synthahol. I really like this scene, and there's Geordi and Data. They talk for a few minutes, and they check the tech, and they talk about this, and it's this kind of storage medium. Maybe it's this, maybe it's that. And you can just see Worf just getting more and more irritated and drinking his drink. Let's talk. More Synthahol. I like this scene. Yeah. It's fun.
And Geordi says, I've never felt better. And then he looks over at Christy, and she gives him that little cutesy wave. Oh, that was so cute.
And he's like, well, maybe, actually, maybe I should go and see the ladies rather than talking about work.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. It's fun to see Geordi in that sort of mode. I don't think we'll ever see it again. We certainly never see Christy Henshaw again, but it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to see Geordi being that. I know you're a Geordi fan, Lou, but he is a little bit of a loser, isn't he?
A little bit.
But it's fun to see. It's fun to see him in this kind of.
You know, it's really hard for me to say I'm a Geordi fan. Watching the show for pleasure, like I said earlier, watching it for pleasure versus watching it for review is just an entirely different thing. And I always liked Geordi because of the fact that he's blind, and that doesn't stop him. He gets beat on once in a while. He becomes he's blind. He still becomes chief engineer of this starship. He keeps it running pretty smooth. Now, you can't say Worf does a good job in security because of all the people that board it on a regular basis. But, you know, as far as that. But, however, evaluating Geordi as we've gone along, he is a dick.
This guy is useless.
Well, I mean, he does a good job keeping the ship running, and when they get
but he's a dick.
A dick. I would never want to work for him.
The guy is an absolute dick. He is the manager from
hell. He is. The fact that he went from Khan to chief engineer, and I'm sure Wesley's wondering when he's going to get that kind of bump. But. Yeah, evaluating Geordi as a reviewer is different than watching Geordi.
Yeah.
I determine that. I still like Geordi as, I don't know, maybe it's because I like LeVar so much too.
I like LeVar too. I think LeVar is great, Geordi less so much. So divorcing the actor from the character. Right. I'm a big fan of LeVar. Geordi, not so much, but he did what he had to do.
Yeah, I wish I could be Sheldon Cooper spending time with Will Wheaton. I would just kill to have access to Will Wheaton, but I cannot stand Wesley Crusher. He drives me crazy.
I like Wesley.
Hence,
I actually went through a phase of, so when I first watched TNG, I liked Wesley. Because I was around about his age, and I was a little bit geeky and thought, he's awesome. And then as I grew older, I thought, I don't like Wesley. Now I'm a little bit older again. I've gone through the phase of, I actually like Wesley. So I'm a Wesley Crusher apologist, much like James, I think.
Well, you know, go to episode 61 of the Lou Trek Show, and that's where we kill off Wesley Crusher. You're going to see how Brian Dedamore and I killed Wesley Crusher. So many different ways, including shotgun blast to the face. And Everything you can imagine. Okay.
I like Wesley, and I like Will Wheaton too.
Yes.
He's a geek's geek, I think.
Okay. So Geordi spots Christy and decides he's going to give it a shot. And he does. He stops her on the way to the Arboretum and decides to escort her. And of course, Worf, sitting back there with the stunned Data, like, and let's face it, we were all stunned at the time. You know, Data just had it. You know, he was on screen. But Worf said,
I've been tutoring him, and he learns quickly.
How's that? That Klingon goat. What exactly does Worf think he's done for this situation? I'm all alone.
No, you're not all alone. But I think it's completely in character here. I think that all, you know, in Worf's mind, all he needed to do is, you know, he needed to remind Geordi that he had to show courage and show the fire in his eyes. And I think that's what he kind of, you know, simplistically in his mind, that's what he took away from it. And I actually like these interactions. And actually, I think, so this is something that happens throughout the episode. There are a lot of scenes where there's character moments between, you know, whether it's with people in sickbay, just having a chat on the side, or if it's Geordi and Worf and Data, the way that they solve their problems. Even when they're talking about the techie stuff, which is what they're doing at the beginning of this episode in sickbay, it is written in a way that makes the characters, you know, much more three-dimensional. And I think that this is one of the telltale marks of Rene Echeverria's kind of writing. It's that you do see these much more of a kind of more grounded, more more human moments and kind of less formal stuff. And I actually think it works very well in this episode. Mm-hmm.
All right. What do you think of the scenes like with John Doe in sickbay? I mean, you know, when he wakes up and he grabs Dr. Crusher's arm and thanks her for his life, and then, you know, just has a very, very simple question of, who am I?
Who am I?
You know, I don't put very many clips in. I'd like to do that here, maybe if I can remember, and not put a 15-minute pause. So hopefully I'll do that.
I do like those scenes when he wakes up and it's, who am I? I just think it's I don't know. I'm gonna prefix some of my comments on this episode, but I think this is I wouldn't say this episode is slow paced. I think it takes a steady pace to the episode. It's not full of action. And it sort of plods along quite slowly. I think compared to some episodes, it might seem to some to be a little bit dragged out. But I actually think this is really well executed. And I like that slow progression between John and Beverly. I think that's really nicely done in this episode.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing, it's got a fairly cute girl and a very long ponytail. You can't beat that.
That's always a result in my book.
Always a good thing, ain't it?
Always a good thing.
So, okay. Doc, any comments so far? You're quiet.
No, I'm not being quiet for that long. One thing that it is a slow, kind of, it takes its time as an episode in terms of kind of the character, the moments, and the pacing and so on. Strange things about this episode, it also does take its time in terms of the real world, or this in-universe world, of how long it's taken them. Because I think they mentioned that he was picked up like 8 weeks ago, and then there's mentions of, you know, them going to find his planet, which is still X number of weeks away. And
it's around a month, I think they mentioned in the episode, and then we're still 3 weeks away from your home world towards the end. So this has been going on for 7, 8, 9 weeks or so, hasn't it? It's a very drawn out episode, I think.
It is, and something that I think they do achieve, I think they achieve the passing of time through the development of the characters. So sometimes you have, so there's obviously the bond that's built up between Wesley, so between Crusher and the patient. There's obviously other stuff that has gone on in terms of the groove on and stuff like that. But I think that it doesn't look like it's a snap, like changing character that is unusual. It seems like it's much more drawn out over the 8 weeks or however long it is that this episode is set over. And I think that you see this subtle character development and change in relationships as you watch the episode. And I think it's very, you know, I think it's one of the episodes that's set over the longest period of time, assuming we're not taking into account things like time travel here. But you see the kind of the natural development of the relationships. And I think they kind of pull this off very well.
Okay, let's go back to John Doe and his remarkable recovery powers. And who walks in? Mr. O'Brien with his first dislocated shoulder. I do believe it's the first time we've seen this, right?
It is.
Kayaking on the holodeck. It's something that we'll see in DS9 a number of times.
Oh, yeah, quite a few.
Yep. It's quite interesting the way that he's there and he's like, oh, I'm dying here, Doc, I'm dying here. And John just walks up and just touches him.
Yeah.
And heals him. Yeah. This is where we really get to see some of John's powers, his mysterious.
Right.
You know, we finally realize that John has something more to him than just the mysterious alien with amnesia.
Yeah. Yeah. And before we get to O'Brien, that's right, I forgot to mention Riker's patiently waiting for a turbo lift. And what do we get?
That was interesting. So there's Geordi getting off with Christy Henshaw in the turbo.
Yes.
That was an interesting scene. That's fun, and I quite like Riker's reaction to that. He's like, "Oh well, yeah." Oh, Geordi.
I mean, the fact that she's like 4 feet shorter than he is, Riker. That is.
Yeah.
So I mean, he's like looking down and.
Okay, I have big problems with this Uh-oh. Scene because, you know, Janeway wouldn't allow this kind of stuff to be going on her ship. Like, Riker is there going, hey, ooh, that's the kind of behavior we want from our senior officers.
I think canoodling on a turbo lift openly isn't good behavior, to be honest. I don't think that's something that senior officers should be, or any officer for that matter, should be doing on the, you know, in public where they could be caught.
Yes, but
because I mean, I mentioned Janeway.
I'm all for them having relationships. Absolutely, canoodling openly on a ship, maybe not.
But remember that Janeway does specifically pull up Tom and Bilal.
Well, yeah,
I think,
on numerous occasions, and I just I was just reminded of those instances.
Yes, but at the time, the entire ship was being experimented on, and Janeway just was absolutely nuts.
Yeah, well, you say that, but I'm still of the firm belief they hadn't quite got around to experimenting on Janeway yet. She was just that way.
But what does Christy do on the ship? I always thought maybe she was just like a teenager whose parents were actually on the ship. I didn't think she really had a function.
We don't know. I'm sure she's got some job. Maybe she's a flower arranger or, I don't know, something.
Okay, well, yeah. Maybe she works in the Arboretum, and that's where she was heading.
Yep. Just give me 2 seconds,
guys. Okay, but, yeah, I wonder if, you know, maybe that's something that Crusher would have looked at is how did he possibly heal O'Brien so fast? How did John do that? That's a nice thing to be able to touch someone and, you know, dock your foot's not hurting anymore now.
No, sure. And it's kind of the introduction, right, of this, you know, this secondary mystery that starts going on away from just not knowing who the patient is. But now it seems to be developing, you know, away from the medical condition, the very technical medical condition that Crusher was talking about. It's now like becoming clear that there's, you know, something very special that is happening to this dude. And he should, I think Crusher's worried because he might set up his own rival sickbay next door and probably have a much greater success than she does.
Oh, that's true. Until it changes the probabilities of everything on the ship.
Yeah, I see where you went there.
Well, see, I thought you were going there. I was just going there with you.
No.
That's funny. Okay. Well, all right, that's okay. So back at the Crusher quarters, Beverly and Wesley are discussing John Doe and how Wesley thinks that he might become his future daddy.
Yeah, she does have a certain... I can understand it as well, because I think he is quite charming and she has a certain attraction to him. I mean, I find him quite an interesting and quite a charming character. What about you guys? Do you think he's endearing? I find it very much that way.
I agree. He's a smooth talker. He's appreciative of everything she's done for him, so... I don't know. I never reattached someone's arm and brought him pretty much back to life. I don't know what kind of intimacy that is built.
Now, I don't have an opinion of whether or not John Doe is acting like a nice guy. Or, you know, not. But I find this scene to be horrendous. You basically have, can you remember here, you've got son and mother talking about this stuff, and I find it really uncomfortable. And watching it, I kind of thought, why is Wesley, who is what, 17 or so, talking to his mum about hey, but don't you like him a little? To me, it sounded like this conversation should have been between Troy and Crusher. At which point I started thinking, well, maybe Troy's just not in this episode, and that's why they've replaced it with Wesley. But Troy then appears later on in the episode.
She does appear later on. I think that's just Wesley being honest with his mother and saying, look, maybe you should move on from father, maybe you should, you know, I didn't have a problem with this scene. Maybe he's saying, look, you know, you like him, he's a charming guy, he likes you, why not?
I'm not having that discussion with my mum.
Really? That's odd. I don't know. I don't see a problem with it at all. I have a kind of conversation with my daughter about...
17?
Well, I mean, she's...
I didn't have a problem with the scene.
Well, okay.
I think Wesley's old enough. I think he's mature enough. I think Wesley's old enough. He's mature enough to have that discussion with his mother and think, look, he likes you. You like him. Why not? Why not go for it? She hasn't been with a man, presumably, in any serious way for... How old was Wesley when Jack Crusher died? 2 or 3 years old, right. Maybe? I don't think we know. So maybe 13, 14 years? It's about time she got a seeing to, shall we say.
Well,
I thought Wesley was too forthright in suggesting they go ahead with it. And also, certainly the choice of language, it just threw me back to similar conversations I know Troy and Crusher have had, Dr. Crusher, that is, in the past. And it just kind of, there was just a part of me that thought, was it really going to be those guys in the original script? That's all that it just rang an alarm bell. And I deemed Troy, and I thought, well, maybe Troy wasn't in this week for whatever reason. But then she does appear later, so... You know,
she does
briefly, maybe it is me reading too much into it.
Well, I don't know. Everyone, what do y'all think about it? Should Wesley have had this conversation with Mom? I don't see it as a big deal. I think he's just kind of like, to me, it seemed like water cooler moment for him. You know, he's just happens to mention it. Little gossip, that's all. But, no, I do it with my daughter. You know, I see the way she looks at some boys, and I start egging her on about it. So, but I don't know. Okay. So, Geordi figures out that the storage device, which they figure it's a biochemical device, is actually a navigational chart. And guess what, John? We could take you home. No. Oh, no, you don't. No, he doesn't want to go home, but he doesn't know why. He just knows he can't return home. See, and at this point is when I'm thinking, this guy's full of crap. You know, I had a feeling that he was lying the whole time. But then it's, you know, no, I can't go home. I can't tell you why, because I don't know why, but you mustn't take me home. That's all there is to it. Am I right or close?
I can't remember the first time I watched this episode. I mean, it was so many years ago. I think all through this episode, I buy his story. I don't think at any point that he was lying. I always see John Doe as being very genuine in this episode. I don't think he was lying at all. I think he did have a memory blank, and then it comes back. That's just maybe the way I see it. I don't think he was lying at all. I think he's a very genuine guy, and he was very attached to the Enterprise crew and was very grateful for the help that he received from them. So I don't see him lying at any point.
No, I mean first time run. First time when you hear his stories, you kind of think, oh, this doesn't make sense. And, you know, I don't know why you can't take me home, but you just can't take me home. And, you know, upon rewatch, yeah, obviously we know he's being truthful, but it just felt at the time that he was lying. And then you see these yellow vibrations happening to him, and you know something's definitely going on.
Well, I just think it's very Star Trek.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is just—it's just incredibly Star Trek. And everything's going on with him, and you're thinking, no, there's something more to this guy. Obviously, you know it. There's something more to this guy than he's letting on. And I don't remember watching this for the first time. It would have been around 1991, maybe. No, probably would have been a few years later, actually. And I've always just seen him as very genuine.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. But he knows that there's some kind of change and he has to get off the ship. So he tries to steal a shuttle. And Worf tries to stop him.
Worf tries to stop him, and obviously they have that little confrontation on the sort of gantry above the shuttle bay. And he throws Worf. He warns him, no, don't come near me. I don't want to hurt anyone. Please stay away. And then and Worf has one hell of a fall, doesn't he? I mean, right onto his back. That looks really, really, I mean, I'm saying really painful. It actually kills Worf. And, you know, that sort of fall to kill a Klingon, because they're extremely tough, is one heck of a fall. But he falls right on his back and breaks his neck and dies.
Yeah.
Which is quite shocking.
But you know what I'm curious about is Worf had to take a turbo lift to get up to him. But for some, I wondered where the stair go from. I mean, there was some kind of stairs there for a while.
Why did he have to take a turbo lift? I did actually wonder that when I watched that today, and I just thought, wasn't there just some stairs around the back? He could just walk around and then walk up some stairs. Mm. He had to walk outside and take a turbo lift up around 15, 20 feet. I mean, it couldn't even have been a full deck, could it?
No.
So I thought that as well. It was a little odd with the turbo.
Yeah, because
but you don't want the other guy to have the tactical advantage as you're coming up the stairs. Well, so you don't want them to be ahead of above you.
Yeah, I get that.
But they were there at one time.
But when he goes up in the turbo lift, is it like deck 15 and one quarter?
Yeah. Right.
Platform 9 3/4.
But I mean, even when
you think at that point, the computer can say, "Are you sure?" I mean, it literally is only like 8 steps, Worf.
Yeah.
Come on.
Are you really sure? It does involve changing the bulb. Yeah.
I mean, when Picard B was trying to get off the ship, you can. I'll let you. I mean, still there was a stair there, going up to the control. But it's gone this week. Maybe it'll be back next week. Maybe they were cleaning the rails and, you know, it's just... Or someone broke it. But yes, you're right. John's light forces Worf over the edge, and it ends up killing him, breaking his neck. But don't worry. John's going to get back on that turbo lift and come on down and take care of the situation.
So in one way, this scene is pretty good for like the Star Trek drinking game, in the sense that Worf does get like knocked out and thrown onto his backside. But on the other hand, someone fails to steal a shuttle. So that's pretty incredible.
Good point. Yeah, that's such a good point. He doesn't get off the ship. He doesn't get the shuttle. He kills a security chief, but... Huh.
But he kills the security chief and then brings him back to life.
Yeah, so what's the charge? Murder? Attempted murder?
It's still murder, right?
I don't think it was murder. He didn't deliberately mean it. It's probably manslaughter at best. He didn't mean to hurt him. He couldn't control it. Maybe he could claim insanity. I don't know. But it was an accidental killing of Worf. But he brought him back to life. And obviously Picard later in the ready room says that's why he's still here. Yeah. And not in the brig, because he actually saved Worf.
See, I was thinking, yeah, it would be an interesting manslaughter charge when the chief primary witness is the one that was killed and is able to testify and how he got killed.
Yeah. Yeah. He killed me, but I'm okay now. I got better.
I am feeling much better now.
Now, let me be slightly facetious here and ask the question, you know, while John Doe is like evolving and taking the next step in, you know, in the evolution of his species, why is it only his catsuit that glows?
No, it glows through the catsuit.
Then why doesn't his head or hands glow? It seems a little... It almost as if they were projecting an effect onto his clothes.
I thought it was more like it was transforming him a little at a time. And then as the glow, because the glow gets bigger, so it's more being transformed until finally at the end when all of him is transformed.
No, I think that certainly happens by the end. Yeah.
Whatever it is, he just has this glow about him. So back, Worf comes back to life, and while they're trying to take care of Worf, Geordi has to come and thank John for his newfound confidence.
I like this scene, and he's like, maybe I just helped you find something that was already in you. And he sort of touches John. I like that. I do like John. I think he's a very endearing and very charming character, and I like his interactions with everyone in the crew, and Geordi just sort of walks off all swaggering. We never see this confident Geordi again. Uh-uh. I'm assuming that this whatever that John passed on to him fades quite quickly, because Geordi ends up being a loser for pretty much the rest of the run, and is like very unsuccessful with women. But he had a good month, so yeah. You know. Well, good for Geordi. He had a good
It was
month.
Fun.
He got to lay Chris.
Yeah, right.
At least a few times.
Hopefully. Well.
I'm sure he did.
Maybe she wasn't impressed in the end. That's why we never see her again.
Yeah, quite possibly. Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right. So, let's see. So, the alien ship meets up with the Enterprise, and I forgot to mention they were traveling warp 9.72. And we'll be there in about 11 hours. And, of course, that makes John completely nervous. But they're there now. And they're going to beat the crap out of the Enterprise unless they release John. Because, as I said, he's a wanted fugitive. And his list of capital offenses include... He's a disruptive influence. He spreads lies. He encourages dissent. He disturbs the natural order of their society. So, in other words, he's President Obama.
I don't have any comments on that, on President Obama. You'd be much more qualified to talk about that than I would.
Oh, yeah. He's terrible here. One of his platforms was he wasn't going to be like Bush. He was going to, you know, be good with Congress on creating new laws and get rid of the executive order thing. And that's pretty much all Obama's ever done is executive orders. Something that Congress won't pass, he'll pass on his own with executive privilege and make a law that he wants. So that's the kind of Obama man we got. It's kind of like basically he's the king. He's the king of America. And what he says goes.
So, Lou, is Nebraska more of a... Republicans.
Yes, it is.
Then the Democrat. Yes. Yeah, I guess. I guess
yes,
so.
Yes, it is.
I guess so. Yeah. It's more of a much more of a Republican than a Democrat. Right. State. I guess that was the case. Yeah.
I of course I can't imagine, you know, using the words president and Trump in the same sentence, but no. Please, oh God, Lou. I hope not.
Please, Lou. Please, Lou. I know you American guys, you're crazy, but please do not vote Trump in. Come on, even you guys aren't that stupid.
I know. I'd rather have the Queen at this point.
Well, if you guys vote Trump in, then I declare that Britain shall invade America and we shall retake that country. We gave that country back to you several hundred years ago. If you vote Trump in, I will personally back Her Majesty and we shall take our country back.
Gonna call up the note, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
We shall take the country back.
Okay, so all those list of offenses against John, how could Picard possibly not want to turn him over? Disrupts the natural order of their society. Who does that anymore? So, conference. Oh, you know something we need to bring back is the sizzle. I've been saying that, but really, if you think about it, the sizzle has been happening in this episode the whole time.
There has been a little
bit. There's been a lot of sizzle.
That's true. There's been quite a lot of sizzle, yeah.
O'Brien got the sizzle. Geordi got the sizzle.
Geordi got the sizzle. Yeah. Worf got the sizzle.
Yes.
Yeah.
And maybe Wesley got a little sizzle too. Who knows?
and maybe Beverly Crusher, if she was lucky.
Yeah. I got a feeling she was sizzled twice that night.
Yeah.
So, conference. I don't know how Picard says this with a straight face when he says, "They've made serious accusations against you." What serious accusations? He spreads lies. He encourages dissent. Those are all subjective.
I have a problem with this part of the episode, and I don't even think it needs to be here. And they don't have to have this debate about extradition. And they take it very, very seriously. And they frankly shouldn't. I don't think they should take it seriously at all. You know, maybe there should be a one-to-one between John and the captain, and they might have to have that chat. But they don't need to have Riker then, you know, talk about, oh, what if it was a Federation citizen, blah, 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 blah. Now, none of that matters. You know, really, none of it matters. You've got a point where the guy that you're going to send across, who clearly doesn't know anything, and even if he does remember stuff, he's going to be executed. And the Federation, we're not going to really execute him. And if Federation is anything like, you know, what modern day democracies are like, is that we wouldn't, you know, the UK would never extradite to America for someone to be executed. And I don't see how Picard can be even toying with the idea of extraditing this guy to be, you know, to be killed.
Well, the prime directive.
And I think that this, I mean, in the past, this gets taken care of, right? When the guy comes up to him and he asks for asylum. And that's really all that is missing from this episode. You know, we're more than willing to give people asylum for whatever reason. And I don't think the Prime Directive... Does the Prime Directive hold? I don't know. You know, I suppose they are. They went on a humanitarian mission to save someone that was on a crashed shuttle somewhere. You know, once you've intervened at that point, you can't then just claim Prime Directive and send him back to be hung, in my opinion.
Well, but the thing is, you're going to be passing our judgment of what he's done over their judgment. I mean, he's a criminal.
Okay. Yep. I would prefer our judgment than their judgment.
Well, definitely. I think because, our judgment's better because we don't kill people. But again, if that was the case, the Federation would be scooping up people off planets left and right because they're about to be killed. And that's not what the Federation's job is.
No, sure. And in fact, you can make the statements of why don't we go around saving people in all of the shuttle accidents. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a difference between like actively going out and trying to find people or having stumbled across someone and offering humanitarian aid at the point that they need it. So given that we've being comfortable to offer humanitarian aid, and the guy is, you know, no one knows who he is and he's a complete mystery. I don't think that sits very well with even a discussion about should you hand him back to be executed.
I don't know. Really, I mean, that's what she says, you know, I brought him back to life, I saved his life, I did all this, what, so they could kill him? But again, if he's not a Federation citizen, he's a Zalconian, and the Zalconian society has determined that he's committed crimes that deserve death. I don't know where Picard can just usurp their authority and say, well, we're not going to let you kill him.
He doesn't really have any leg to stand on, does he? Because the Prime Directive holds him to it. If he is, by Zalconian law, a criminal, whether Picard agrees or the Federation agrees, whether the acts he's committed are crimes or not, is irrelevant at this point. If by Zalconian law, no matter how perverted, this guy is a criminal, then Picard must hand him over to them. Even if he disagrees with it, that is the essence of the Prime Directive. He must not interfere.
I'm not necessarily convinced by that, in the sense that... I'm not convinced
by the Prime Directive at all, because they make it up. They sort of obey it and then disobey it at will.
But the way that it would work, you know, the way that it would work in the modern day, you know, if for example, you actually had a guy in America that had murdered 50 people, say, managed to escape the US, managed to make his way to England, enter England illegally, and then just declared himself here, we wouldn't extradite him back to the US.
We wouldn't
do so on the grounds that he would face the death penalty. And that would be the first thing to be tripped. So for us to send him back, we would demand that he can't be sentenced to death.
You sure about that?
Yeah, positive.
Probably, yeah.
And most European countries wouldn't.
Yeah, we don't have the death penalty. We don't agree with it because it's immoral.
Mm. So, I mean, of course, if you then start going beyond the US and start talking about, you know, dodgier regimes around the world, and we're not talking about President Trump here, there certainly is this idea about us not sending people back to face, like, you know, dodgy trials. But even the US, where we would probably acknowledge that there's a fairly decent court structure and, you know,
we wouldn't
send people back to be executed.
No, we don't execute people. We haven't executed people here since the early 60s.
Wow.
Because the death penalties are more, we believe.
Yeah, Lou.
I can see Lou's face.
Yeah. There are times.
From an English perspective, I kind of, you know, in my mind, I'm saying, well, surely the argument goes in that direction. You might have, there might be different views on this, but that's kind of where in my mind I thought it logically or it morally ended up.
Lou's googling the last death penalty in the UK. I can see his face. He's looking at it. Screen is lit up. I can see you, Lou.
No.
I think it was the early 60s. I think actually the last person executed in this country was a woman who was hung, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that. But...
Really?
Yeah.
Here, I'm going to send you guys a link in the chat. Check this guy out.
I'm sure whoever this person is horrendous.
There's a story for you.
I'm sure he's awful. And probably deserved what he got.
But. He shot a woman point blank range in the head, in the face with a shotgun, for her car. Yeah. There are sometimes.
The tattoos all over his face. Okay.
Oh yeah, well, he also is cutting his penis too. But that's not the point. The point is. There are times, I think, that what are you going to do with this guy? I mean, if he's in prison, there's too many chances that he could escape and get out into society. Sometimes, you just, you know, over there, I think, in England, this is an attack on England, because I think you guys, in some ways, have a much better system than we do with, you know, letting live and let live, but... We got a lot of these animals here, and That's what they are. They're animals. And sometimes, this is not John. John is not this guy. But, like, this guy here in particular, you know, there's nothing you could do for this man to save him or to rehabilitate him. And he attacks prisoners. He attacks prison guards. And at some point,
I do get it. But you're also a country where people can walk into a store, and I've been to the US, Lou, and I know you have as well, James. You can walk into a store and buy a gun.
Yeah.
I can walk into a store and buy a firearm, which I can go out and kill someone. Yep. And that shocked me when I was in Seattle a little over a year ago, and I walked into a store, and there were rifles, there were guns on the wall, and it shocked me. I was shaking, and it frightened me. I was physically shaking because I was very, very frightened by that. I could walk into a store and buy a gun, which I could go out and kill someone with, and I believe that to be immoral. Yeah. And that's just something you cannot do here. Having a hunting rifle, and I know a lot of people out there have hunting rifles, whether you're for or against hunting is a different matter. Having a hunting rifle is one thing. Having a firearm that you can walk around with and kill someone with is something I find absolutely abhorrent. So that's completely aside from this episode.
I'm not even sure at what point I'm going to edit any of this out, but you know, like I say, sometimes there are needs. I think there are needs for capital punishment, and there are sometimes not.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but you know,
Leave it all in.
Yeah, whatever. I think so too. So, but the Zalconians, you know, they want him back, but I think Picard, one thing, you know, he says is that he has a memory loss. He's ill prepared to defend himself. In that case, then maybe extradition or is a little unwarranted because these people want to kill him, whether he can defend himself or not. And the fact that, and here's another thing that you guys need to know. He's manifested some changes. He's changing, and that's when you see the blood drain from the Zalconian face. You know, what do you mean? Lies. You're all lies. Well, you know, it's happened right in front of us. We've seen it happen. Lies. And then we get one of the most interesting weapons we have ever seen in Star Trek, I think. He just turns and flicks his hand, and next thing you know, everyone on the ship can't breathe.
He's using the Force, isn't he? Now, this is an interesting part of this episode. Did he flick a switch, Lou, did you say? I didn't see him flick a switch.
No, I think he just, you know...
I think he was manifesting the power that John had, but he was either hiding it or he was able to use this Force to choke everyone on the ship. I don't think he had a weapon there. I think he was I think he had this power within him, but he was denying it to himself, and I think he was able to just through his own emotion just get everyone on the ship to start choking themselves. That's the way I saw it.
Okay, Mark, that's hugely generous, I think. And I think that sounds very good. And look,
that's the way I saw it.
Then throw into the fact that maybe a privileged upper class of people on the society have made the next step and have superpowers, and they're, you know, not allowing the proletariat that'd be great.
I think this guy had the power, but he was denying it to himself. I think he was afraid of it and unleashed it through some form of anger.
Sunad? Because he was angry. Are you talking about Sunad?
Yeah.
No. I'm looking at it actually. He gives a glance back to a guy who actually starts tapping things, and then people start joking.
Really?
Oh yeah, this is definitely some kind of weapon they have on their ship.
That disappoints me then. I didn't notice that. That disappoints me if it's some technical, because that takes away from the whole point of the episode, I think. Okay, that disappoints me. If that was the case, it is ambiguous.
Yeah.
So, Mark, you mentioned that this is, what did you say, an interesting part of the episode or or a strange. I think it's, unfortunately, I think it's the sucky part of the episode. I think that this is far too close to like a Dr. Evil weapon of doom than we really should be getting in Star Trek. And this idea that the guy on another ship can manage to strangle people.
Yeah, I using the force, choking people, yeah.
Really?
And my notes does say, you know, man on the ship strangles everyone. What?
Now, I assumed he had the power that John Doe had, but it was a latent power, and he was one of those people who was undergoing the same transformation as John, but was denying it to himself, but through anger was able to unleash the force. That's the way I see it. That's the way I see it. Is that through his anger he was able to do that, but didn't realize that it happened. And then obviously John comes around, touches everyone, a little nice golden glow, touches the wall of the ship, and then everyone's suddenly free. That's the way I see this. I didn't see that happening through technology. I think that guy, as one of the Zalkonians, had that latent, the transformation, the transfiguration that we're going to see in this later on this episode. I think he was able to unleash that without actually realizing it himself. It was almost a subconscious thing.
I thought it was that John had the upside and Sunet had the downside. You know, there's two sides to every Schwartz.
Mm.
So, but after he chokes them all, however he does it, then John immediately unchokes Beverly, and then her assistant, and then another third one outside of sick bay, and that's when he finally touches a comm panel, and the entire ship
saves the ship.
And instead of just doing it again, he decides he's going to go ahead and fight with traditional weapons, and that's Sunad, by the way. But unfortunately, John's already undergone his transformation and puts him on hold. So what do you think of John as the ball of light?
I think this is really cool.
Yeah,
I really like this. I think that's interesting. He's the it's very, very Star Trek-y. I'm going to sort of preface some of my review. It's very Star Trek-y. This guy turns from this physical being into something more, you know, something more that's akin to energy, and he's a higher being. I just think this is very Star Trek. I think it's interesting. I really like it.
Yeah. Of course, John is able to beam Sunad from his ship right onto the bridge.
Yeah, that's fine. Q can do it, so why not?
Yeah. John can do anything now. Kill him! Hurry! Don't let it happen anymore! But now they can't stop John from spreading those lies and dissent. And that's dangerous.
Let me be really unfair on this episode at this stage. Because fundamentally, I do agree with Mark. But the speech that John has at the end is a little bit, I think it's a little bit over again. The Federation is great. Because he talks
these
about
kind and generous people.
He's going through it and said, and now I'm taking the next stage of evolution. You think, that's good. And these kind and generous people. And he was talking before about how everyone is different and they're accepted for their things. And he's going through how great the Federation is. Isn't Dr. Crusher hot? And you start thinking, really, why are we having this mutual loving going on at this stage? I didn't think they need the mutual loving. So that's kind of my nitpick.
Nitpick alert. Nitpick alert. This is a Battle Bridge nitpick alert. If you or anyone in your family is a member of the Borg, please proceed with caution. Perfection does not apply.
A further nitpick is, why does a glowing man cast a shadow? What?
I didn't see the shadow.
When he touches, leans over and touches the face. He's not a source of light, which he probably should be if he's glowing, and he does cast a shadow, which he probably shouldn't if he's glowing. But, you know, there are limitations to the effects.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. So,
but don't take that seriously. That's not. It's not an issue.
So when he touches Beverly, you mean?
Yeah, puts something across her face on the bridge.
Yeah, he touches her cheek with his...
Fascinating.
With his hand, doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh, you're right. There is a...
So how could that happen?
Fascinating. I don't know. But anyway, I notice he turns into kind of a ball of light that looks somewhat familiar.
And then disappears out of the ship.
Yes. But, I mean, when he's a big ball of light till he gets outside the ship. Then he turns into a little tiny ball of light that makes me...
Well, he can... Yeah, he can be as big or as small and... as he wants, no. And travel into other dimensional planes.
You're not getting it. I got a feeling he leaves the ship and then he comes back later to get somebody pregnant. It seems like the same light ball effect.
It does look similar.
Yes, almost the same.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's going to impregnate some woman somewhere. No, it could never happen. That could never happen. A ball of light can't get
pregnant. That'll never happen. No. A ball of light couldn't go up inside a woman and make her pregnant. Uh-uh. Never. Uh-uh. Especially 2 years ago. No.
No.
Never.
Never would have happened. Yeah, see, you're participating in the deception. The Federation child deception.
Absolutely.
Yes. Don't call me Dreadnought. Okay. By now, Dr. Roberts is going, what the hell have we turned into?
No, I'm just trying to stay on the right side of that artificial barrier that I attempted to introduce earlier on in the call.
All right.
I have a nitpick, and it's something we skipped over.
Well, hey, I'll put in a nitpick alert right here.
Oh, no, it's not really a nitpick.
Oh, darn. Well, it's too late. I've already done the alert.
Okay. Mechanical versus biochemical. Now, I think what I'm about to say is probably unfair, and I know that in the future these two things might be a lot more aligned, but there's a part of me that kind of thought that this was the equivalent of Data and Geordi going, you know, looking at an elephant and going, and then thinking it's a mechanical object until realizing, actually, it might be a biochemical object after all. I think that the difference between a computer and an elephant should be pretty clear, especially to guys that are supposed to be technical guys in the future. And I know that there might be a convergence, I accept that, but I just thought that that seemed a little bit weird. But here's my true nitpick, because I've actually written down that I think that the tech talk is pretty good when they're talking about the star charts and the, you know, having the map and stuff. But there's a point where they go, oh, let's assume these things here are, you know, pulsars and they're rotating. And then I think Data makes the statement, can you convert this
into something? Yeah, into
standardized time. And you think, oh, okay, because there's such a thing as a standardized time.
Standardized time, yeah. I know where you're going, James. And I had the same thing.
An alien map is going to be able to be converted to units of arbitrary units of measurement that are used on Earth, linked to our rotation around the planet.
I know.
You what?
I thought exactly the same thing. It's like, yeah, just conveniently convert this. Is there a star with a pulsar with a rotation of 1.276 whatever seconds it was? And it's like, how the hell did you work that out? And the computer just works it out. Yeah, I had the same nitpick, James.
Really?
Now you need to have you need to have it linked to something that is inherent elsewhere. So if you were to be using, you know, the mass of an electron as your standard measure, or the or the half-life as your standard measure, fine. But to suggest that your standard measure is some arbitrary thing that we made up 2,000 years ago
in terms of seconds,
and then changed, it's silly.
It is ludicrous, yeah. I'm with you on that. I did think that when I was watching today, and they said, just convert that into seconds for us. Yeah, we'll do that for you, and the computer just does it. It's like, that makes no sense at all.
Yeah. Anyway, that is just my little, small little moan.
Nerd high five.
High five. All right. Well, anything else we got to do before we go into our final thoughts?
No, I think I'm done.
Okay. Well, then, Then it's time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the stuff that Ben is made of, the terrific stuff. So, I like seeing all the medical things that Beverly has at her disposal. The laboratory was really nice. I do like when his arm, you know, his arm was severed and she was not only able to reattach it, but geez, it works perfectly. And I even like seeing the light show as, you know, it's stimulating the muscles. It's a pretty neat little light show as he's sitting in the chair. So I like seeing all the new gadgets that they had. And John was a very interesting character. And like Picard, we didn't even mention this. He says he was honored to be present at the emergence of a new species, and it's kind of fun. That is fun in Star Trek to be there as a new species is emerging. So, but we don't know what his real name is yet. So, since we don't know his real name and he just left a ball of light, I'm just going to call him Ethan. Okay.
That's my son's name.
Oh, nice. Fascinating. So, wow. So, you're saying a ball of light is responsible for that?
Indeed.
Could be. But anyway, it's a fairly good, I think it's a good story. It doesn't really qualify as the best. And, you know, I don't even know if it really fits in the middle of the road, but it's not too far over the middle, so I'm just, instead of a 3, I'm probably going to go with 3.5. It's got some very good moments to it, but not totally perfectly. So I'll go 3.5. Mark, what about you?
Okay, well, I chose to come on for this episode, so obviously I like it. It's one of those episodes which I think I said earlier, I've listened to a lot of Star Trek podcasts, and no one's ever talked about this episode. So is it a forgotten episode? Is it something that no one doesn't, you know, people don't like? Is it just dismissed entirely? I think because it's probably lost in the awesomeness that is the rest of season 3, or it comes right before the best of both worlds. Is it just forgotten about? I don't know. I love this episode. I think it's a really, really good episode. It's incredibly Star Trek-y. I really like the character of John Doe. I like his relationship that he has with Beverly. Yeah, there's a few nitpicks here and there, but I just think that whole idea of his race going through that transformation from being a corporeal entity into an energy being and moving on to a higher spiritual plane is just, it just has something for me. It's not a perfect episode. There are a few nitpicks in there, as James alluded to, but I'm going to give this a 4. I think this is a really solid episode. An episode that no one ever talks about, and people should talk more about this episode because it's really good and I enjoy it. So a 4.
A 4. Okay, Doctor.
Okay, I mean, I'm not in love with this episode, and I have never really been in love with this episode. I've always considered this being the kind of the filler before Best of Both Worlds, and maybe that does kind of, you know, taint my view of it. Kind of rewatching, it was better than I remember. I think it's also very, it clearly is very, very quote unquote Star Trek-y, right? You're not going to have, you know, you're not going to watch this episode and not realize you're watching Star Trek, even away from...
It's incredibly Star Trek-y. Nothing's more Star Trek-y than this.
No, indeed. And it's the kind of thing that you don't do on other TV shows. I also think that the writing in this episode is good, and it gives a lot of character moments. It's actually just very... I think it's very well written in terms of the dialogue and what we learn about people. And I think it is, there's a lot of good stuff here. I don't feel it's that good. I just think that there's something that it's almost lacking somehow. I do think it might be, you know, less than the sum of its parts when you put across a relatively interesting interesting story with some good character moments, with some, you know, with obviously a very Star Trek-y concept. I don't know. I just, it doesn't quite click for me. I don't like the, I don't really like the way they gloss over the or they have the debate about the extradition stuff, which I don't think is needed. I don't like the, you know, Dr. Evil strangulation device. I think that there's a little bit too much patting yourself on the back in places. But it's not, you know, it's not dreadful. So I am going to come in lower than anyone here, but this has gone up in the past weeks as I watched and rewatched this episode and kind of started to think. So originally would have been lower, but I'm coming in at, you know, bang in the middle at 3 out of 5.
That's still a respectable score.
Yeah.
I think I like episodes that no one else likes, don't I? I think I have a different perspective on some episodes, which is interesting. I like to be different.
Well, yeah, but you know, and the guests still like Star Trek more than we do. 25 episodes. Doc, you're at a 3.84. I'm at a 3.77. And the guests still are loving Star Trek at 4.33. You believe that?
People love Star Trek, don't they?
I mean, this is the point where I'd say perhaps they should get their own podcast if they like it more than us.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. If you don't like us, go do your own thing. Why haven't you yet, huh? Yeah. Mark pays the bills.
It is interesting, actually, that the guests like Star Trek. I think you're right, Lou. When you watch things critically, if you just sit down and just watch it because you love Star Trek, and I'll sit down and just watch it and go, yeah, I love Star Trek, I do. But when you sit down and actually think about it, you probably are more critical. So that's interesting that the guests... Mm-hmm. It's interesting but not surprising that the guests love Star Trek more than you.
Right. So, okay, guys, last chance. Suddenly Human, The Loss, and Identity Crisis. And if you want to start your own podcast, Mark pays the bills. All right. Thanks for coming on, Mark. And we will see you again for Brothers. Brother. We'll see you for Brothers. Yes.
Brother from another mother.
That's right. Brother from another mother across another country. Okay, guys, so join us next... Oh, hey, we still haven't decided, Doc. How are we going to do Best of Both Worlds Part 1 and Part 2? Are we going to, like, have a hiatus, or should we just post them 1 week after each other?
I think 9-month hiatus.
Oh, man, that's not good.
People will kill you for that.
I know. What are you going to do when it's time to go to Lower Pylon 2? Should we? That's another thing. Do we start Lower Pylon 2 at middle of season 4 of The Next Generation or season 5 like they did?
Hey? I'm not
sure. He's thinking timeline-wise.
Timeline, yes. Yeah. Yes. DS9 started before TNG ever ended.
No, indeed. And it would have been, what's it? Would have been mid-season 6.
Yeah.
So about mid-season 6, do we start Lower Pylon 2?
Well, I've always advocated, I think that is cool, and then have them go in back-to-back, and then as Voyager comes in, again,
yes, do back-to-back. Yes, we do the same thing.
But that's a lot of work.
That is a lot of work. Yeah, I think it's a terrible idea, really.
It's awful.
No way. Yeah, it's awful.
It sounds cool, but it's a terrible idea.
By the time we get to season 7.
Because you guys have a life.
Yeah, barely. So here we are at season 6, Starship Mine. Or Lessons. No, we're going to go to Lessons. And, you know, and I talk about what happened on DS9, the prophets and asshole Bajoran. Isn't that funny? Oh, my God. Talk about watching a series for entertainment value versus reviewing. The Upper Pylon 2 people have been calling Bajorans asshole Bajorans lately. You notice that?
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I always liked the Bajorans. They were spiritual and
no, they're assholes.
They're assholes.
Yeah.
They really are assholes.
Yeah.
So they've got it dead on, although admittedly I don't know what Podge means. I know it's
Podge is poor arrogant Julian.
Poor arrogant Julian.
It's like poor dumb Harry that they had in the
PDH.
Yeah. Poor arrogant Julian the Podge.
Yeah. So it's PAG.
Yeah.
Or PAJ.
PAJ, yeah. Poor arrogant Julian, yeah.
Poor
the Podge.
The Podge. Okay, that makes more sense. I just, you know, I go with it. I know what they're saying. And I was just recently on Upper Pylon 2. And I'm going to leave this in too because, Doc, I'm pinning you down right here and now. They want to know when you're coming on.
I haven't been on Upper Pylon 2 yet.
Well, I don't think they care about the dumb kid.
No, they don't care. They don't love me. Oh, well, actually, I was meant to be on an episode, but then I had a bit of a family emergency, so I had to cancel. So those guys don't love me. I don't know if they're listening to this or not, but you don't love me?
Sure they do. Yes, I know Melissa does, and I know Chris does, and I think Blair does too. So, yeah, we'll see. Sure, hey, guys, if you do listen to us, put it in the show notes or in the forum, and Doc will give you the date that he wants to come on your show.
There's a lot of good. There is a lot of good DS9. I mean, there's a general statement, but I actually think I like a lot of season 9, whereas others will claim it only gets started in season 4. So, you know, tell me which episode were you on for?
Whispers.
Whispers. Okay, Whispers is a. I think Whispers is a great episode. I also love the gist, but I noticed that they posted today Armageddon Game. Armageddon Game is one of my favorite episodes of DS9. And it's not a big episode in any way, but I love the Julian O'Brien relationship, and that's really where it starts. There's so much good stuff in season 2 and 3, and I assume anything I choose will have already been taken, and I don't want to knock anyone else off. So I'll see.
No, don't assume that. Don't assume that because, you know, like I said, I am catching up on season 2 of Upper Pylon 2. I'm watching the episode and then listening to the review, just like I did with Gamma Quadrant. And there have been a lot of shows that there's no guests. I just listened to one head, Kieran McDuff. So don't assume. Always write to them and try and find out what's available. There may be more than you think, but I'll be back on for Visionary.
Let me ask, where did the Wilderness get to? Did they get to early season 3, or did they go further? You did The Wire, right, Mark?
I did The Wire, yeah, which is one of my favorite episodes.
It is. It's very, very good.
It's an incredible episode, yeah.
And I don't think they went much beyond that.
No, I think it might have went one or two episodes beyond that. Yeah.
Also, Tribunal is a great episode. With with O'Brien's Mr. Happy.
Yes.
Oh yeah, that's true. But I'll be back on for Visionary. I like Visionary.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
They're the most powerful force in the universe. Now the Borg have the most destructive plan ever to conquer the human race.
You have committed acts of aggression against the United Federation of Planets.
Target 1, the Enterprise.
Directed, Deck 9.
Geordi, evacuate engineering.
Target 2, Captain Picard.
Your culture will adapt to service hours.
We would rather die.
The final target.
Earth.
On the next exciting episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Okay, so join us next week, everyone, as we review episode 26 of season 3, and that will be The Best of Both Worlds, part 1. And we will have Blair, speaking of which, from Upper Pylon 2. So join us in. Take care, everyone. Thank you for downloading. Hopefully we can put a dent in Mark's wallet by downloading so much. And good night.
Goodbye. Say good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Blooper.
Do you have his video up? Because all I see is a spinning...
Yeah, I've got Mrs. Lou and a dog.
Oh, I don't see
anything. I have Mrs. Lou and a dog. Hello, dog.
He has many dogs.
But he's muted at the moment, so I can't hear anything you say.
Sorry. This is Diane back there. And
hello.
Yeah, that's my better half. And this is Candy. She's one of three dogs that we have. She is a big girl. I love big girls.
And I cannot lie. You other brothers can deny.
See. I don't know if... give me a kiss. She will not give kisses. She doesn't like to give kisses too much. They have to be very special to get a kiss. Right? Say hi.
No, the thing is, because I can't see the video here, I'm not entirely sure who you're talking about.
I'm sorry.
We're talking about a little dog.
Yes.
It's a very cute dog.
Oh, actually. She's beautiful. She's a tricolor chihuahua, half chihuahua, half rat terrier mix. Mm. It's your girl.
That's going to say she's quite big for a chihuahua. Yes. Yeah, but I can see the chihuahua in it.
Oh, yeah. She's got the big brown eyes, and she's a very sweet, loving dog. But, okay, we'll go back. We'll go back. Huh? Can you kiss? No? Oh, no. Okay.
No, not interested.
Alright. Okay, so anyway, I find out what it is that you wanted again.
Mucinex with coughs, because Lexa's really coughing really bad.
I think we do have some inside the box. Inside there. Okay. Do you want me to come up and look?
If you got the time, if you don't.
Do I have the time, guys?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, you got the time. We got 2 minutes.
Okay, now... What can we'll you guys discuss while I'm gone? I mean, it's been Cherry Coke, it's been RC Cola.
Let's talk about the new Star Wars, James.
Oh, okay.
Diane,
geeky topic, but Star
come
Wars
here.
Is good.
Hold on a second, guys. Hold on.
Come on. Sit down.
Star Trek-y, I can't tell you nothing except on Voyager.
Nope, they're going to talk about the new Star Wars. Sit down.
The new Star Wars.
Yes. Discuss it while I go work for
them. Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
So, I'm good, thank you. So, what did we all think about the new Star Wars?
Oh, I thought it was great. I'm not sure exactly who whose daughter Rey is, but I've read something about suspension of... It's Luke's daughter, or...
I think Luke's daughter is the natural assumption. I'd like to think that they've pulled a little bit of a surprise and she's going to be someone else's. But I think the natural assumption is that Rey was Luke's daughter. What do you think, James? Well, James, I know you've seen the new Star Wars. I've seen the new Star Wars 4 times. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I think the obvious answer is that Rey is Luke's daughter, but maybe there's a surprise coming.
No, so I've seen it twice, but once I slept through it because I took the kids and I just fell asleep halfway through, which happens more often than you would imagine, certainly when I'm in charge of the kids. I think that all directions are... pointing towards Rebecca's daughter, but are they going to do the obvious, or are they going to just kind of switch it around? I don't know. I don't know where they go from here, though. So I think that the film did a very good job of resetting and repositioning the story to where frankly you'd want it to be. And I think it's very similar to what Star Trek 09 did, which is they kind of took a clean slate and then put you in a position where you can now go and go forward. And I think that's where we're at. We're basically in the same position as after 08 with The Force Awakens. I just really want them to make sure that they kind of positively step in kind of, you know, a good direction now and start building on the things that are there. And I suppose it looks like that's going to predominantly revolve around Rey and Luke in the second film.
We'll see where that goes. But I really enjoyed it. I mean, four times. So I went to the midnight showing. I actually had four interviews the next day, but that's another story. So I went to the midnight showing on the Thursday, or very early Thursday morning at midnight. And then I went with some friends on the Friday evening, and then I took the kids on the Saturday morning. So I saw the film twice in less than 12 hours. And then I went around a couple of weeks later and took the kids again. So they saw it for the second time, and my wife saw it for the first time. And everyone loved it. And I might actually try and go again. So I might try and see that for a fifth time before it stops showing at the cinema. But you can already pre-order the Blu-ray on Amazon. I'm sure that's going to come out around May, I would have guessed.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, typically.
Yeah.
But no, it was certainly all, wasn't it? Lots of fun. Did you see the Han Solo dying stuff? Did you see that come?
I wasn't entirely surprised by that, because obviously I think Harrison Ford agreed to do the movie. He said, yeah, okay, I can imagine the conversation. Okay, I'll do the movie. Give me lots of money and also kill Han Solo off. So it wasn't a huge surprise. First time I saw this in the midnight show, and I was sat next to a young girl who had the Princess Leia style sort of Danish pastry stuck on the side of her head going on, which was really cool. And when Han Solo was killed, she burst into tears. And I must admit, I was almost brought to tears myself, but I wasn't entirely surprised by it. I think that was... I could see it coming. And I think when he walks across the bridge and Kylo Ren is there, or Ben Solo, as they've called him, he was there, you're thinking, yeah, he's going to die here.
What was it with that bridge?
It wasn't unsurprising.
No handrails on that bridge.
Yeah, it's health and safety. Health and you safety. Would have thought... that thing's a death trap.
I mean, doesn't the First Order have like some unionized workforce to make sure that these kind of accidents don't happen?
No. There's none of that. I mean, basically, they've had about... Can you imagine the amount of people it required to build that Starkiller base, that new Death Star? And besides all of that, when will the Empire learn that you don't build Death Stars? It is the stupidest idea. They've already had two Death Stars blown up. Let's build another one. Let's build it inside an entire planet. That'll work. That's a good idea. Every time they build a mega weapon, the rebels come in and blow it up. These guys will never, ever learn.
So I had huge problems with the Starkiller base.
I have. Okay. Let's have mega problems with this.
First of all, the stupidest name you can imagine. I mean, even the kids, it's not really a very good name there.
Well, Starkiller, if you were...
Skywalker.
Starkiller. Luke Starkiller was Luke Skywalker's original name, which is cool. I mean, that's fine. That's a real thing for Star Trek, for Star Wars nerds. The real issue I had, it was... We've destroyed this planet from the other side of the galaxy, and you can see it in real time, but that thing's probably, 50,000 light years away? So they could see these planets in the Republic being blown up in real time, but it's on the other side of the galaxy, so I have problems with that, and I'm sure that's already been talked about.
Okay, so, Mark, first of all, from a couple of things. Once the base had sucked up the star... Okay.
Yeah, I know. Okay, we've got
what does it do?
Conservation of angular momentum. Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay. I'm going to park the fact that you bring in the star, you then weigh as much as the star, and then everyone gets crushed on the planet because there's too much gravity. But let's just assume you can harvest the energy in a way that doesn't bring in the mass.
Let's just bypass the laws of physics for a moment.
Yeah. But once you've done that to the first star, and then you've shot some, what are you supposed to do? Go and find another star.
Well, that's what I was wondering as well. Is like we've
you're
just
kind of out of stars.
Yeah, but the thing is, they destroy the first planet, and we've that's what I wonder is.
I'm feeling you, Joe.
So they fire the weapon for the first time. Have they already drained the star, or have they already only half drained the star? Have they sucked a little bit of power out of their star, and then they're just sucking the rest of it? Or have they already moved on from the first star to destroy the first lot of planet? That bit I don't get at all. That's something I'm like, hang on a minute. What were you doing with that weapon?
The thing is, it could have worked because you don't need to fully drain a star for you to have some power. But they had the line in it saying, as long as the sky is still light, we still have a chance. And that was the stupidest line. If they hadn't had that wouldn't need them to fully drain the star. Another thing that I have heard mentioned, and I probably can't take credit for this, but it does appear that J.J. Abrams doesn't have a good grasp of astronomical distances, both in terms of 09, when people are sitting on a planet around Vulcan or possibly in another system, who knows, and watches the thing destroyed in real time, or the Republic planets blowing up in this one and that kind of stuff. It's obviously there are larger distances involved here that are not quite being respected.
That's it, because when they go to the planet at the end, it takes them like 5 seconds to get there.
Oh, you mean with Rey?
Yeah. When they go and absolutely. Find Luke.
I actually thought that... I'm probably going to be completely shouted down here, but I don't think you needed Luke at the end in this film. I thought there could have been a more natural place to end it without having the coda at the end where Rey goes off and does a promotional shot for the Visit Island tourist board and ends up with Luke Skywalker on Cracky Island. Board. Huh?
Yeah. The Visit Island tourist board.
Yeah.
It was filmed in Ireland, wasn't it? Yeah. It was lovely. Well, it was a lovely scene, but yeah.
I didn't think they quite needed it, especially because, so JJ doesn't direct the next film, right? Although I know that there's continuity in terms of the writing stuff, but if the next director doesn't fully focus on Rey and Luke developing Jedi stuff, it's kind of like a little bit stuck at the moment because they are there and they are waiting for training. So you kind of know where you're picking up. And I think it might be painting them into the corner a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you are right. They do get there in about 20 minutes. And you could say, well, no, it's just a cut. But no, Race, she's wearing the same clothes.
Yeah. They get there very quickly. But there you go. That's how hyperspace works in Star Wars. But all of that, I loved it. I'm more than willing to suspend my disbelief, my belief in the laws of physics as well, with the conservation of angular momentum when they pull in the sun. But never mind, let's forget about that and just assume it all works. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Okay, are we back yet?
We're back.
Okay, we're back. So we were talking about John Doe. Oh, and by the way, do you see that blonde chihuahua, Mark?
I saw the blonde chihuahua.
Yes, he is my lover.
Okay.
Yes, he is my lover. That is my dog. He's my lover. So, I don't mind saying that. Yeah. The only thing he lives to do is lick faces. And somebody wants in. That is funny.